morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Lisa Wood, and I represent defendant appellant Wayner Black. Mr. Black appeals the district court's calculation of his guideline range. In our briefs, we raised four issues, and I would like to start with those involving the district court's designation of Mr. Black as a career offender. The district court erred in classifying Mr. Black as a career offender for two reasons, and both deal with the court's conclusions regarding his prior criminal history. First, the district court erred in finding that Mr. Black's prior convictions were controlled substance offenses because there simply wasn't enough evidence in the record to support such a conclusion. Before a career offender...
Has he actually denied that he was convicted of those drug offenses?
In his objections to the pre-sentence report and his sentencing memorandum and at the sentencing hearing, counsel for Mr. Black raised the issue that there simply wasn't enough evidence.
Well, that's evasive. I mean, he was there, and I don't think you argue either that, in fact, he was convicted of some lesser offense. I think you're just saying it's unclear.
Well, I think it is.
Doesn't he testify doesn't he remember what he was convicted for? Or what?
I don't think he had to testify. Under this court's decision in U.S. v. Moreno-Padilla, and in that same line of cases, this court has held that a defendant can challenge the conclusions made in a PSR by producing evidence that calls into question the accuracy.
Well, all it shows is that there's some unclarity. It doesn't show that he was convicted of a lesser. It's somewhat unclear, but I don't see any. If you look at the conviction reports, I don't see what. Look at the ones in the government. Is it in the government's brief? What are these?
They are in the government's appendix, and they're also, it's document number 131-2. They are on pages.
Well, if you look, for example, at page 16 of the appendix in the government's brief, this order, sentence of probation. What's the ambiguity?
I don't think the order ever identifies, even under a preponderance of the evidence standard, what offense Mr. Black was convicted of in this case.
I'm sorry, what?
The order doesn't identify by a preponderance of the evidence what offense Mr. Black...
Preponderance of the evidence. What's that about?
In order for
This is his sentence, right? He signed it.
He did.
All right, so PCAN, that's what?
That is a very unclear abbreviation for what the offense of conviction was in this case, and that's the very problem with this order.
No one knows what PCAN means?
Well, I think it could either be...
You know what it means.
I think this abbreviation is more consistent with the offense possession of cannabis, which is not a controlled substance.
Okay, so what's wrong with that? Pardon?
Because if this is an order for possession of cannabis, it's not a controlled substance offense under 4B1.2. And he doesn't have the required two controlled substance offenses to warrant the career offender enhancement.
If it's possession of cannabis with an intent to deliver, it's going to qualify, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
All right. And I think you did accurately state the test in your brief here. If a defendant produces evidence that calls into question the reliability of the information within the PSR, my problem is that apart from saying the language, the material in the PSR is all ambiguous, the sentencing orders, the notes from the court could be interpreted in a variety of different ways, apart from that, there isn't any evidence. And I'm curious, too, why didn't the defendant who was presumably standing there say, it was only possession. I never was sentenced for possession with intent to deliver. It would have been all he needed to say, I think, to meet the test of here's some evidence.
Well, I think he did more than that by producing these unclear documents for the court.
That's evasive. We've had that before. That's someone who's unwilling to testify, fearing, you know, perjury or some other sanction.
I don't think
there's no reason to submit evidence that's indirect evidence when you have direct evidence because you were there.
Well, I think under this court standard in Moreno-Padilla.
But I don't think so. We had a similar case about this, in which we were bothered by the fact that in that case, the lawyer had never looked at the document that would have shown whether there was an error in the armed criminal career.
Well, I think that this court's line of cases.
Look, what's a good answer? Forget line of cases. What's a good answer to Judge Pallmeyer's question? Why shouldn't the defendant testify?
Because
if he doesn't testify, we infer that he had nothing to say.
Because he doesn't need to. Because ultimately, it is the government's burden to show by preponderance of the evidence.
This is all legalist mumbo jumbo. He's the person who knows whether he was convicted of simple possession or possession with intent to distribute. So he should say, it can be believed or disbelieved, but he's the primary witness.
Like I said, and I respectfully disagree with you, Judge Posner, I think that Mr. Black's production of these documents satisfied his burden under Moreno-Padilla, which is a burden of production.
Why is that a good rule?
I'm sorry?
Why is that a sensible rule?
Because at sentencing, it's ultimately the government's burden to show, to establish by the preponderance of the evidence, that the defendant has these types of prior convictions before a career offender enhancement.
Well, there was some evidence that would support that conclusion. You're right that the documents are a little ambiguous, but the charging documents were there. Now, obviously, it's possible that Mr. Black pleaded to something less, or the government concluded he didn't have enough evidence, or whatever it might be. But that would be that's how he could clarify. On its face, it looks as though he's charged with a qualifying offense. He's convicted on an offense, and he's sentenced. It's a reasonable conclusion that I think the court could draw that, in fact, those are two qualifying offenses for purposes of the guideline.
Well, I don't think, based on the charging documents, the court could reasonably draw that conclusion. The proper inquiry here is what offense a defendant was ultimately convicted of. And charging documents, really just like arrest reports, don't tell us the offense of conviction. They tell us the charged offense. And we know, based on the course of plea negotiations and other pretrial processes, that the offense of conviction can certainly change. I think that's especially true in drug offenses. And so I don't think that was a reasonable determination for the court to make based on the charging documents. I think that this production of documents satisfied Mr. Black's burden.
What do you think that letter I means after the pecan?
I think it could mean a number of things. I think it could refer to the count of conviction in this case. If you look to the judgment order in the one prior conviction Mr. Black does concede as a controlled substance offense, and that is on page 11 of
the government's appendix.
I'm sorry, it's not the government appendix. It's document 131-2, page 11, and it's from the 2000 conviction. You see that they have the count listed right there, that is something that they may normally put on the judgment order. And so I think that capital I could certainly mean the count of conviction in this case.
Could mean what?
The count of conviction in this case.
Well, I don't know. What does the I stand for?
I don't think it's clear what the I stands for, which is
You had a theory of what it stood for.
I think it stands for the count of conviction.
What is the I an abbreviation for?
I don't know.
It's not I, Richard Posner, right? It's a capital I. It's short for something, like the pecan, right? What's your theory of what it's short for?
My theory is that it stands for the count of conviction in this case.
What
count
is the one? Word that the I would be short for? I don't understand.
One.
Count
correct.
One.
Okay. One. Oh, you think that's a one?
I do.
Roman one. Okay.
I see that I'm running into my rebuttal time, and I would like to reserve some time.
Okay, that's fine. Thank you. So, Ms. Altman?
Good Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Elizabeth Altman, and I represent the United States today. I would like to pick up essentially where counsel left off and talk about this I. Judge Crabb looked at this and found that the PCAN slash I meant possession of cannabis with the intent to distribute. And to the extent that she had to get to these documents, which I will discuss in a moment, that made a second qualifying conviction, and she properly found that he was a career offender. The fact that
after the PCAN, and then you have I, then you have something that looks like A4. What is that supposed to mean?
I don't know. A4, count 4. I don't know. They are unclear. The fact that we can look at it and say it's possession of cannabis with intent or possession of cannabis count 1 or whatever, I don't think that any factual finding about it can be clear error when there are so many readings to it. But before looking at that, I don't think the court even had to get there. The statutes at issue in this case, the statutes that are on the certified judgments of conviction, they are all qualifying predicate offenses to make the defendant a career offender. So if he was convicted of the statutes on those certified statements of conviction, he's a career offender. The PSR is correct. They allege that he either manufactured, delivered, or possessed with intent to distribute a controlled substance. The statutes he was convicted of do not encompass simple possession. So just starting out, we start with the idea that if he committed the crimes, as I said, on the statements of conviction, he is a career offender. So with respect to this issue, there's only one question, and that is whether or not the defendant's claim that the underlying documents are unclear amounts to more than a bare denial of the information in the PSR to get it to where the court even has to consider these documents. And the government, I submit, it simply doesn't. As noted, he never specifically denied that he committed these crimes. He never said he didn't. He never filled out an affidavit that didn't. He never testified. Nowhere did he suggest, "I didn't commit these crimes." The objections to the pre-sentence report, which were very similar to the argument that he made in his sentencing memorandum and at sentencing, all they say is this is unclear. They don't even amount to any denial, let alone a bare denial. He just tries to say, I'm reading from his objections, "I can make out from the handwriting that the sentence was 24 months probation that is concurrent to 99 CR 272-3301. The first line, however, is shorthand that I do not think anyone can reasonably decipher. I would note, however, that it does look like it is a plea to a particular count of the indictment, like what is clearly indicated in 00 CR 114001. The order for probation is likewise nondescript. At the top, there is a reference to PCAN. PCAN, in my opinion, refers to possession of cannabis. The number 4 may refer to a subsection 4 of the Illinois statute." He never says, "I didn't do this." He doesn't even get to the bare denial that's required by this court in United States versus Heckel. He just wants to create some ambiguity, some gray area to try to get the court to follow into this perhaps thing that may have happened. And that's not enough to challenge the findings in the PSR. The information in the PSR, therefore, is accurate, and the standard in Moreno Padilla, which I pulled, indicates that the defendant must prove some evidence that calls the reliability or correctness of the alleged facts into question. A bare denial is not enough. We don't get there here. The PSR is not in question. It's not in doubt. It shows 3 prior convictions for controlled substance offenses, and that makes him a career offender. To the extent this court disagrees with that,
the court.
I'm sorry?
With the court.
Correct. Correct. To the extent that the court believes that the defendant did raise enough to require the district court to look at the documents. The district court, the judge, she did look at the documents provided by the defendant, and that includes page 16 of the government's supplemental brief. And she looked at that, and she said, "I think that's possession of cannabis with intent. That's how I would write it. That's what I think it says." That's supported by the documentation in the certified statements of conviction, which don't show any amendments, which show that's what he was charged with. And so that finding on that document right there, which is what the defendant submitted that he claims shows the doubt, the judge said, "No, it doesn't show any doubt. I don't think that's what it says." And so no matter how you look at it, the defendant would be a career offender, either by the three offenses contained within the PSR, if she doesn't look at the other documents, or by the conviction he admits to and this conviction in 99 CR 9960 that the judge looked at his request and said, that's not enough. I still think that's a qualifying offense. Either way, he's a career offender. Unless the court has any questions with regard to restraint, which this court has already decided in Mr. Black's co-defendant's case, or with regard to acceptance, I would just rest on my briefs for those two issues.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Altman.
Thank you, Your Honors.
How much time does she have? Have a minute? Okay.
Just to go back to the clarity, counsel just admitted that those judgment orders were unclear. And I think that makes my point, that under this court's precedent...
Well, you're not meeting the the no-denial point that she makes.
Well, I think...
Do you have any response to that?
I think Mr. Black did more than barely than a bare denial at the district court.
No denial. He didn't deny anything.
I think he produced evidence that called into question the accuracy and the reliability of the information and the conclusions.
But he didn't deny that. He didn't deny anything.
His production of those documents was...
No, this is a game. This is a game. He's afraid to deny because he knows it would be false.
I disagree with you, Your Honor. I think that the production of those documents satisfied his burden, which then shifted the burden to the government to prove by preponderance of the evidence those allegations in the PSR, which the government did not do in this case. And unless this court has further questions, I rest on
my case. Well, thank you very much. You were appointed, were you not? You retained? Well, we thank you anyway. And we thank Ms. Altman, and the court will stay in recess.